The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's give it up for our super producer, the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Max Williams.
Maximus to the maximum. That's him. He's there. He's our guy.
We were singing to each other again off air. I'm Ben, you're Noel. And our off air conversations are generally kind of fun, I think. Most times on this show, what would you say?
Well, what else could I say? I completely agree. These are the fun times, the fun podcast times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this had me wondering, this is totally unrelated, but before we get rolling today, we were talking about Smooth Criminal, right, by Michael Jackson. Well, we were just sort of all three humming along.
We were just checking in and making sure we were all okay.
Yes, yeah. And it reminded me of our good friend of the show, Annie Reese of Saver and Stuff Mom Never Told You fame. I'm sure she's irritated by that song. And I was wondering, I was trying to guess, do you guys have songs about your name? And if so, how do you feel about them? Noel, I'd imagine the closest is the first Noel.
You would imagine correctly. And every time someone sings that at me, they think they're the first one to have ever done it. Mm-hmm. And bully for them is what I say. Go on thinking that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you guys can guess which one I've always gotten.
Let's see.
Max. Something maximum.
Mm-hmm. Maxwell Silverhammer.
Oh, yeah. Maxwell Bang Bang. Yeah. The murderiest of Beatles songs.
Right.
The song's basically about a school shooter that uses a hammer.
And I am cursed, I would say, with the Michael Jackson song Ben, which is about his friend who is a rat. Mm-hmm. And there's also Benny and the Jets, and I don't even want to give it airtime. But I just
gave it to you. It's already living rent free in all of our minds.
It doesn't go anywhere. The song doesn't electric go anywhere. Boots,
a mohair suit. You know, I read it in a magazine.
Maybe we stay on the rat because
that was for a movie. Did you know that? Starring Crispin Glover.
I vaguely remember hearing that. I've never seen the film, though.
The movie is about Crispin Glover, who I think it's actually a remake of like a movie from maybe a Vincent Price movie or something. It's about a dude who like controls rats with his mind.
Right.
Kind of like the way you control corvids with your mind. So there's definitely a connection.
Oh, shucks. Yeah, when Noel and our ride or die, Mr. Matt Frederick, and I were on the road most recently, we had a weird moment. We were at a fancy grocery store, and I bought a pack of hard-boiled eggs. And Noel, I think for a moment you thought I was just going to eat them.
I didn't know you were the Eggman.
I am not. I'm baffled that people buy hard-boiled eggs by themselves.
Are you the walrus then, if you're not the Eggman?
Oh, gosh. We're going so many places. We had a segue. Anyway, yeah, I fed those to the crows, though they were not, I wasn't just sitting eating goblin mode.
And then you got chastised by just a regular Joe, yeah. A regular fella for feeding the crows, because apparently they're like, I don't know, it emboldens them.
Yeah, he called them sky rats. So if you're listening, sir, I didn't learn a thing and will not change my ways.
This segue holds, though. We're talking about a rat of yes. sorts today. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, we are talking about one of the most famous rats, formerly rats, in all of American culture. And this is part two of a two-part episode. We're talking about the legendary Charles Entertainment Cheese. Now, Noel, we left on a bit of a cliffhanger in part one.
That's right. Things were really heating up in June of 1979. A guy named Bob Brock, not Bob Rock, the Metallica producer, Bob Brock wanted to get an exclusive franchise deal with Pizza Time, the Pizza Time theater franchises. So he signed a $200 million co-development deal with our friend Mr. Bushnell of Atari fame and animatronic singing robot fame. And this gave Mr. Brock exclusive franchising rights to Pizza Time theaters in 16 states across the southern and midwestern U.S. And it gave him some pretty specific superpowers that maybe our Mr. Bushnell might not have fully realized at the time.
Yeah, and it was pretty bold, pretty aspirational. The contract aimed for a target of 285 stores, 200 of which would be directly operated by Tim, which is Bob Brock's company, and another 85 would be sub-franchised out. And this was pretty big money because Tim, that's short for Topeka Inn Management, would be ponying up the capital to build these locations. And they were going to spend about $1 million a pop. This was pretty cool for a while, for a bit, because during 1980, Pizza Time Theater flourished. They added dozens and dozens of stores to their crew. This included both franchises and corporate-owned locations, and there were even some international locations. Things grew really quickly, and sometimes in the world of corporate business, when things grow quickly, they can grow quickly out of hand. It only took about a year for Brock's deal to show its ugly side. Brock's firm had received training on how to run all these Pizza Time locations. And there's definitely a science to it, right? And once they had the information, once they knew how to conduct day-to-day business, they went back on their contract, dude, and they opened up their own competing chain of restaurants, which they called Showbiz Pizza.
Yeah, and it's funny because essentially they were like their own copycats and they joined the ranks of a bunch of other copycat kind of, you know, futuristic robotic pizza restaurants, including a place called Bullwinkle's Family Restaurant, which is cool. I imagine that would have an intellectual property tie-in with the Rocky and Bullwinkle show featuring the iconic moose and squirrel. A place called Celebration Station, which sounds like a delightful place to have a slice. Fair Play Pizza Theater, which sounds a little innocuous and kind of dull. It's like, that's not where the real fun happens. That's where everything is just equitable. You
that's
know,
like
for
legal
all
seafood. Yeah.
100% Fair Play Pizza. That doesn't sound like anyone's taking many risks there. Major Magic's All-Star Pizza Review. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a good time. Mm-hmm. And then a place called Harazmataz.
Love it.
Yeah, and Bushnell said that they had around 20 of these copycats that they were competing with. And now, going back on that contract, Showbiz was essentially the most popular of these knockoffs, right? And by the way, we're getting a good bit of this information from the actual history of Showbiz Pizza on showbizpizza.com/history/index.html. And a really great article from Fast Company with a fabulous name called Robots, Pizza, and Sensory Overload, The Chuck E. Cheese Origin Story by Benj Edwards.
Yeah, correct. And the article by Benj Edwards is, I think, one of the go-to reads here. It's a definitely long read, but it's worth it.
So right at the top, long read.
So the and do check it out, folks, because it is worth it. Anyway, as Edwards writes, Brock had a reason for this betrayal. He discovered a new kind of animatronic technology that he thought was better than what Bushnell's team had created. This is the work of a guy named Aaron Fetcher of Creative Engineering that you might recognize from some documentaries of Days Gone By, which I love. Fetcher had developed these huge, full-body, life-size animatronic characters. He called them the Rockafire Explosion, and they had smoother movements than the Chuck E. Cheese Cyberamics characters. They were they're a different crew, right? But if you look at what they're doing, it's 100% pulled from the Chuck E. Cheese playbook, which itself has some notes of plagiarism from the mouse. So this is like, this is a bridge too far for Pizza Time.
Right. And it's funny because, you know, I think we all were a little confused as to which one of these stores we actually remembered from our youth. Because, you know, I think me and you, Ben, were a little older than Max. No specifics need be named. But I do remember Showbiz Pizza. And I always assumed that Showbiz Pizza and Chuck E. Cheese were the same thing. I don't remember Pizza Time Theater, but I do remember maybe there were like remnants or something like that, or like little, you know, some of these like fake posters for these bands or whatever, these, you know, robot musicians that maybe had still some branding from that. But they were originally separate entities, right? And because when this, you know, Showbiz Pizza came out with the higher quality animatronics, it did really, really well. And that did not sit well with Bushnell. He actually sued Brock's firm and eventually won what's called like a profit garnishing judgment, which I imagine it's sort of like if you sue over like a song that copies you, then you end up entitled to all or a portion of the earnings from that song, like a Blurred Lines kind of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And unfortunately, this judgment came too late to be super useful to Bushnell and team, because they were trying to turn Pizza Time from a kid's place to more a what they called a diversified leisure company. In their 1982 annual report, you can see this. Bushnell writes, "We believe that 1983 will be a time of growth and change in which the transition from a specialized restaurant concept to a diversified leisure company will be evident." They're trying to go, they're doing a Dave and Buster's is what they're trying to do. Dave and Buster's, for everyone, was opened in Dallas in 1982. So he may have been aware of something like this, but he definitely had his finger on the pulse. And it wasn't a bad instinct. It just maybe was, again, too little too late.
The timing is everything. And I'm sorry, guys, I keep referencing this show, Halt and Catch Fire, because I am like in the thick of it. And now in the show where I am in season 4, it's now the early 90s. And the show's been, you know, following the explosion of technology, including video games and companies like Atari, since around this time. And what you see time and time again in the show, it gets like a fictionalized kind of like alt history version of a lot of these things that really, really happened. For example, like the, you know, the development of the World Wide Web and all of that. Timing is everything. You can have the best idea in the world, but if it's not ready, if the consumers aren't ready for it or the content isn't there yet to fill it, then it's not gonna fly.
Right, right. And that could be a huge issue. In early 1983, Pizza Time's balance sheet was looking bad. one slight push in the wrong direction could fell the company entire. And this push came in the form of a U.S. tech stock crash. Investors, who are a pretty sensitive bunch, were immediately frightened. And when tech investors get frightened, as we can see in the current days of the United States, there are a lot of ramifications. Once the tech sector got scared in the stock crash of 83, they started cutting ties with Atari. Atari became a shadow of its former self. People didn't want to invest in tech, so lines of credit dried up for Bushnell's firms. Pizza Time stock fell from $26 per share all the way down to $4 per share. And then wait, it gets worse. It plummeted further to $2.50 a share. And then wait, it gets worse. Pizza Time came out and confirmed it had been losing money for 3/4 of the previous year.
Jeez Louise. Yeah, I mean, we already talked about the hefty price tag on each one of these locations, $1,000,983, you know, per pizza restaurant with over 240 locations across the U.S., even sometimes, you know, in smaller cities that maybe did not necessarily have the audience yet to support these. They were making a big play and maybe, I think, definitely overplaying their hand here, because you had folks like Showbiz that had maybe already learned from the inside, you know, how to ease in a little bit more, you know, to dip the toe into the market. Maybe not spend every single dollar, you know, in the same way that Pizza Time Theater had. Also, with all these copycats, you were getting a little bit of saturation with this whole concept. Because again, like, you can't really exactly copyright this concept. You can copyright actual characters and the way they look and all of that stuff. And as we know, it's not that hard to just tweak a few little details, and you can even get away with ripping off Mickey Mouse. But you can't really copyright the idea of a robot-driven, you know, entertainment pizza arcade joint. So people were almost a little bit tired of the concept at this point, and it was a little bit of like kind of brand confusion too, I think, may have, because again, we're talking about this stuff from when we were a kid. We had serious brand confusion many, many years later. Which one is which? We don't know. And there's a reason for that, because of what's about to happen. That's sort of the answer to the questions that we had.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. Yeah, and we're going to get some more information here from Anna Green, writing at Mental Floss, the Chuck E. Cheese Showbiz Pizza Robot Wars. Who doesn't love a robot war?
Yeah, rock 'em, sock 'em.
Yeah, everybody listening after 2040, I guess. But so the novelty's wearing off. You describe it perfectly. And Bushnell also is aware of the problem. It's not just that the industry is expanded with all these competitors. It's that Chuck E. Cheese itself has expanded way too far, way too fast. He had this interesting quote where he said, Chuck E. Cheese was so new that when we would first open a unit in St. Louis, you wouldn't have enough capacity. It was just, okay, bar the door. But that lasted for about a year and a half. Then people would settle down. They didn't need to go to Chuck E. Cheese every time grandma came to town. They didn't need to go to Chuck E. Cheese once a month. They found that we'll do the kids' birthdays and we'll go somewhere on special events. And the frequency of visits dropped from 10 a year to 3 a year. He had racked up additional debt, $22 million in debt, because Bushnell had been using Chuck E. Cheese money to fund other startups.
Can I say real quick, I've got a expression that I use a lot in my regular life, and it comes from a TikTok video of this kid, and he's got a paper plate with Charles Entertainment cheese on it, and it's got some chocolate chips on it, and he says, chocolate chips on the Chuck E. Cheese plate. Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. So whenever something's awesome, I say, man, that is chocolate chips on the Chuck E. Cheese plate right there. Oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Okay, I had to fit that in. I promised my kid I would fit that in
okay.
to the episode. Because, you know, this branding is still with us. And it did manage to kind of, you know, insert itself into the zeitgeist. And we're going to get to the now of Chuck E. Cheese. But at this point, they are not doing well. That is not a good play, my friend. That is not chocolate chips on the Chuck E. Cheese plate to use that money to fund other startups. Because we know startups, this is the era, the beginning of startup culture. You know, this like kind of Silicon Valley, like fake it till you make it attitude. And we know that most startups fail miserably and that money evaporates. Mm-hmm. And if you're just pulling it from the kitty, from your already struggling business, that is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, many startups these days are created entirely in hopes of selling them to a bigger company later. Mm-hmm. It's a different mentality than what you would want for restaurants. So Bushnell and team have to file for bankruptcy in 1984 as a result of all these deleterious factors. Bushnell gets pushed out. Showbiz buys up the failing franchise.
There you go.
And it operates both Chuck E. Cheese and Showbiz locations independently because, probably because at this point, Chuck E. Cheese was so well known that they didn't want to kill him off. They renamed the company Showbiz Pizza Time, which does sound like the name of it does sound like the name of several weird off-brand restaurants I've been to in other countries. Someone's like, make something sound America. Call it Pizza Time. No, give it, hit it with that razzmatazz. Call it Showbiz Pizza Time.
We don't even, this is not even started on razzmatazz. I was talking to, you met my friend Steven when we were out in LA, and I was talking to him about this subject, and he was like, I swear I went to Chuck E. Cheese and Showbiz Pizza at different times when I was a kid growing up in the 80s. And the answer is definitely. It is that kind of a Mandela effect, though. You know what I mean? Where it's like, which one was it? Was it Shazam or was it Kazam? Was it Chuck E. Cheese or was it Showbiz? It was probably both. And then there came a point where you'd probably have ones that were under one branding that worked in that area and that already were doing good business. They just left well enough alone. And then they, you know, they probably monitored it and saw which ones were doing better. And they left them as they were because, but they also, they shared characters at this point, if I'm not mistaken, right? Because I remember the song, there was a commercial. It was Showbiz Pizza, where a kid can be a kid. And then later it became Chuck E. Cheese's, where a kid can be a kid. And that's why I was super confused because they did coexist simultaneously. And then I think they were kind of squashed together, and now there are no more show businesses. There's only the mouse, the cheese, the big cheese.
Yeah, we'll get to this. So right now, Bob, Brock, and Fetcher are victorious, but only for a time. Remember, Fetcher is the creative guy. Brock is more the corporate money-centric type. So Fetcher loses out. Showbiz is still hemorrhaging money, and management says, okay, part of the reason this is not more profitable is because those Rock of Fire explosion acts are just increasingly elaborate. They're increasingly expensive. So they start sidelining Fetcher and they use voice impersonators to play his characters. Fetcher is getting increasingly disillusioned with the corporate world and he starts tinkering with other projects. He builds new animatronics, high-tech Rock of Fire toys that honestly a lot of people couldn't afford. He starts working on the anti-gravity machine. He called it. It's a It's a predecessor to email. It could send messages over telephone lines. And then in 1990, his company, Fetcher's company, Creative Engineering, was kicked out of showbiz completely. Fetcher lost the war. He was able to take Rock of Fire Explosion with him because he refused to sell the character rights to Showbiz. And he was convinced. He was like, I believe in my Rock of Fire gang. I know that they can do something outside of this pizza joint. So he said, I'm going to keep working on the robots. And because Showbiz no longer had the rights to those characters, this is where the confusion occurs.
Yes.
They converted the remaining Rock of Fire robots into Chuck E. Cheese characters, replacing their exteriors in kind of a Westworld style thing. They left the original machinery intact. This was called concept unification. And there's another example of this. It's a little conspiratorial, but if you go to the Hall of Presidents, right? Sure. Everybody knows Disney Hall of Presidents. Mm-hmm. You'll notice that one in particular looks very weird. It's the it's the statue or animatronic character of former President Donald Trump. It looks a lot like somebody started building it with the intention that it would be President Hillary Clinton. And then had to change it.
Oh man!
When the election came through, pull up a picture. I'm telling you, you can see it.
No, that's super cool. I actually was when I was at Disney recently. I intended to go to the Hall of Presidents, but it's one of those things that happens on a schedule. You can't just wander in, and I missed the timing for it because the fireworks happened, and I wasn't going to miss that, obviously. But this is super interesting, Ben. This like reskinning of these Terminator exoskeleton kind of guys, as we mentioned briefly, there is and you alluded to a minute ago, there's a really cool documentary called, I think it's just called The Rock of Fire Explosion, band, or maybe it's just rock. It's easy to find. And you could watch the whole thing on YouTube, actually. But mm-hmm. Fetcher is a main character in it. And it basically is about all of these Rockafire super fans that kind of band together. These aren't rich people. They band together and buy the Rockafire explosion animatronics from Fetcher. Or I think that's right. They buy it from him and they build it in a trailer. Mm-hmm. Actually didn't make it all the way to the end, so I'm not quite sure what but this is good, because that way I'm not spoiling it for anyone. There's definitely some intrigue, and it shows you, Ben, we've talked about this off air, the kind of nightmarish hellscape that is 15 of these things skinless and pantomiming their whatever lip sync things at the same time, like a row of lucky cats at like a Chinese novelty store. You know, it's really, really pretty scary stuff. And clearly the impetus for games like Five Nights at Freddy's, which is like the jump scares with these like creepy, you know, Rockafire animatronic robot things.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the documentary is well worth a watch. Spoiler, the Rockafire explosion show, those characters they end up being sold to other restaurants and entertainment centers, which further amplifies the possible Mandela effect, because you could have seen them at some place completely different, like Pistol Pete's Pizza, Billy Bob's Wonderland, and so on. All right. So showbiz has unified its concept, right? And they're still facing outside competition. One of their biggest competitors becomes something called Discovery Zone. This is an entertainment center targeted toward kids, but it's a different vibe. They've got an indoor jungle gym. They've got a lot of hands-on activities, interior playgrounds.
Sort of education-driven? I don't know why. When I hear Discovery, I think maybe it's like there's, you know, optical illusions or something like that. Or there's some, maybe I'm totally wrong. It's because I worked at a place called Fort Discovery that was actually run by the U.S. military. And it was like a science-y type museum. So Discovery Zone, probably not that. But then hands-on activities, I do have to assume there may have been some sort of educational component when I hear hands-on activities.
Mostly MMA.
Cool. Hand-to-hand.
Right.
Combat.
Right.
Activities.
Yeah. With pizza.
To the death in a steel cage.
Right. So the sales at Showbiz start to slow down, and there are more disappointing sales in the early 90s. So Showbiz Pizza Time drops the word pizza from the restaurant name, and this is where they start just calling it Chuck E. Cheese. They get a new kid-friendly logo of Charles Entertainment Cheese, and he has a thumbs up, like, hey, we passed our health inspection. And in 1995, they begin a series of massive remodelings. They called this Phase One, and they added Kid Check Kiosk, which like lets parents have a little more security with their children. They also added free attractions so that it didn't feel like it was a continual money sink when you took your family to visit. Chuck E. himself officially goes from kind of rat-like to definitely a mouse. They said enough time has passed. And then they tried something weird. They got really experimental. They made something called the Awesome Adventure Machine in 1997.
Okay. Tell me more. By the way, Discovery Zone, not educational at all. And to this day, there are only two locations at malls, one in Kentucky and one in Ohio. So they clearly didn't win the war either.
And just jump in here, that is actually a remake. I was researching the same thing as you, Noel. Turns out those two are just paying homage to the original Discovery Zone.
So the original is not even around at all.
Right. They went out. They liquidated in 2001.
Got it.
Do the sound cue.
Who's that sneaking in our phone?
It's Max!
And he's full of knowledge just for you right now. Here he comes.
It's Max with the facts!
Great. All right. Awesome. We love it when we can fit that one in organically. So, yeah, this Awesome Adventure Machine, it's a little mad science. Picture someone saying, it's too complex, it's unstable at this stage. And then the corporate type going, I don't care, put it in the restaurants.
Sell it to the children.
Sell it to the children. So this
thing, though it didn't work out in 1997, it was a new kind of test stage, and it gave rise to the Chuck E. Cheese stage show concept called Studio C. Studio C only has one animated figure. That's Childs Entertainment Cheese.
Yep, I've seen this version too, as an adult, with going to kids' birthday parties, and it was definitely not what I remembered and contributed to my confusion.
And this is important because it's a huge cost-saving measure. The other characters are present, but they're on TV monitors, so you only really need one cyborg. They're not cyborgs.
Honestly, it reminds me of the way a lot of roller coasters now or at certain amusement parks are doing more the like motion video stuff rather than actually having to build tracks. You know what I mean? And then obviously the really high quality ones like Disney and Universal, they'll use both sometimes, you know, but it's a real cost saver if you don't have to actually move around or have the real estate required to have a big old track. Same with all of these seriously expensive moving part, you know, animatronic figures that break down and have to be maintained and all of that kind of stuff. So smart on them, you know. It's sad that the kids of this era won't remember the terrifying joy that was the Rock of Fire Explosion Band, though.
Yeah, and to the point about roller coasters, it's also way less expensive insurance-wise.
Oh, 100%.
You know.
Can't get decapitated by a video.
And many years ago at the local amusement park of note here, Six Flags Over Georgia, someone did die.
I wasn't joking.
Z-Force, it was
called. They got decapitated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True story. So there are business reasons behind a lot of these entertainment choices. Now, in the story, all of the units have been completely turned over, remodeled, and themed to Chuck E. Cheese locations. So Showbiz Pizza Time Incorporated changes its company name to Chuck E. Cheese Entertainment Incorporated in 1998, which, yes, I know that's a little bit like saying VIN number or ATM machine, Charles Entertainment Cheese Entertainment Incorporated. But they're making it work, and then they move on to phase two remodeling.
Ah, phase two. That's when they really start leaning into what you aptly described as a casino for children kind of environment. And again, you know, as an adult who has, you know, been to a few casinos, not my thing. It's not something I would have clocked at all when I was a kid, because you just get thrown into these places and you're like, wow, this is amazing. But they all lean much more heavily on gaming rather than like actual console video game cabinets, you know, where you're like playing, you know, a pre-existing property. These are more like roulette type games to earn tickets that you can then exchange for, you know, thing like stuff that are and as we know, even at like Dave and Buster's, similar model, but they at least have like cool video games. And I'm sure some Chuck E. Cheese's have video games, but I seem to recall when I went, very light on the actual branded video games that we know and love, like the, you know, whatever, Tetrises of the world and things like that. Much more these either dinky little rides, you know, like the little airplane that just goes like back and forth, like at the grocery store, or these kind of games of chance. And we know that stuff really can get under your skin and kind of feed this like addiction of I've got to win the thing. I got to get the stuff, you know, I've got an itch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Indoctrinate them young, right? This is weird, but it is successful. In July of 1999, Discovery Zone files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And Childs Entertainment Cheese Entertainment Incorporated buys out their remaining assets and intellectual property. This gets rid of their only major competitor, and they become the dominant family entertainment center in the United States. Back to Showbiz Pizza's official history, they say the early 2000s were a boon for the company. Sales increased. They were constantly opening new locations. They go to phase three remodels where they say, we're going to have new enhanced games. We're going to have a toddler zone. We're going to improve the Sky Tube.
which all that stuff was lifted from Discovery Zone.
Uh-huh. You know, that, yeah, that was basically,
yeah, 100%. So they're like, Discovery Zone's main thing was these ball pits and you know, tumbly kid environments, you know, that you could run around in. We all probably had a place in our youth that was maybe more local or regional. For me, it was a place called Putt-Putt Golf and Games, and they kind of followed the same model. You could see it happening because, you know, you have to keep up with the Joneses, right? And they had these giant play places that would be up in the sky, kind of connected to the ceiling. We have one here in Atlanta that I think is relatively regional called Andretti's. That's like a go-kart kind of joint. And they have one of these like sky tube kind of situations too. So you, this copycatting, because this stuff isn't exactly intellectual property, it always runs rampant when somebody kind of cracks the code.
100%. Yeah. I mean, another great example would be the baseball cap, right? No one can really...
Nope.
Own that. You just own what goes on it.
That's right.
You know what? We should check into the history of the baseball cap. I may be incorrect, but that'll be a
that's
wild
a
ride.
Really good idea. Yeah. Let's make a note of that.
Yeah,
that's a really good idea.
History of the baseball cap. We're cooking live, folks. Okay, so Chuck E. Cheese, they are so successful that they say we're no longer going to sell franchises. They opened the 300th company-owned location in March of 2000, and then they start buying back the franchises from the individual operators or owners.
So and a messy.
Lot of, yeah, a lot of them, they wanted to expand. They're like, my two Chuck E. Cheese's are doing really well. I want to build a third one. And then corporate would say, we don't do that anymore, but we will buy yours back from you. And so they buy up all of these different units. And they even try, for a minute, they had something that I never visited, a small town Chuck E. Cheese that had an all-you-can-eat buffet, a costumed Chuck E. on the floor, and they charged admission at the door. But eventually, these were all given that Studio C animatronic treatment. Because people still went for the animated characters.
They did. That was the kind of selling point. Because at this point, you have a, like I said, you know, whether it be regional or like a massive national chain, most people have a thing like this in their neighborhood, you know, in their city. There was a place, you know, another place where I grew up that was called Funsville. And it was all this kind of stuff. They have like bumper boats and basically like an always on kind of carnival kind of atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So to have that extra selling point, which was the show aspect of it, was about the only thing that they could provide that was any different than any of these other spots.
100%. You know, that's the main draw. You don't go to McDonald's and not expect French fries, right? So this, because what makes it different from any other place then? So anyway, the Cool Chuck era could not last. And Cool Chuck era is the way our pal Dr. Zach decided to phrase this. And I agree with him. Mm-hmm. The company is heading, like the rest of the United States, into the Great Recession. And it was able to keep itself in the black during this time, but a lot of the tricks it used to stay afloat were starting to run thin. This is a novelty concept, which means that when it is no longer novelty to people, they're just going to stay home or they're going to go play in the park. These franchises that they had been absorbing were increasingly scarce. The company had saturated the market. They couldn't expand much further. And they said, okay, we got to stop opening units as quickly and as widely as we have. We need to offer other paths, right, to ourselves. So they begin reoffering franchise options in the United States to save the company money. And they're going to use that money to invest in their existing stores. And this is something that a lot of companies should do more often. Instead of opening the new stuff, you got to invest in what you already know works. And you like how I say that with companies as though all industries are the same? It's a little broad brush there. But anyway, the company started to remove their free entertainment options too in a lot of locations. No more Sky Tubes, no more Toddler Zone, just more games that you have to pay to play, or in stores that had the room, the stuff you mentioned earlier, Noel, bumper cars, other premium attractions. Like how when you go to Six Flags, you still have to pay for laser tag, even though you already paid the price of admission to get into the park. Max, you get it. That's unfair.
So lame. So lame.
So in the summer of 2012, Chuck E. Cheese Entertainment Incorporated was trying to catch up with the times. They knew all of the things that we're talking about. You know, this is a company that's run by, you know, relatively smart people, and they know that you can't rest on your laurels or whatever. Rest on your cheese pizzas. That's horrible. But I'm saying it because I said it and I said what I said. A lot of this was about kind of modernizing the character and what was popular in the 2000s. Pixar, you know, CGI. Let's make it where people can like really, that's what Disney was really all about too. A lot of these like 3D rides, you know, focusing more on like video than on actual movement. So they wanted to catch up, and they're turning at this point Chuck E. Cheese, Charles Entertainment, into a rock star. They're either rebranding the voice, making him a cool skater guy, kind of, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. He is, he's getting too cool for school. Most of the press did not like this.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I owned a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. They said this is disastrous. They said this isn't popular. It's not going to be popular. The general public was like, what have you done to Charles?
I love the idea of the press having an opinion on this.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
we gotta weigh in on this Chuck E. Cheese rebranding, guys.
Still happens. That still happens now. You can find all kinds of... Actually, I bet we could find some think pieces about Chuck E. Cheese in the modern day, maybe.
Anytime nostalgia is at play, you are going to have stakeholders, people that are going to weigh... How dare you, you know? Like the super fans of Rock of Fire Explosion featured in that documentary, or surely has something to say about all of this.
Or literally any Marvel film or sci-fi franchise.
Correct.
Shout out to Star Trek, Max. So, look, the company knows that this is not translated into profits or sales. And so they say, okay, we're going to release our annual report. It's plain text. It's the kind of thing you haven't seen since the early 1980s when Pizza Time Theater entered bankruptcy. And in 2014, Apollo Global Management acquires Charles Entertainment Cheese Entertainment Incorporated, and they buy the 577 stores across the world for about $950 million, making Chuck E. Cheese a privately held, wholly owned subsidiary. Kids don't care about this. Just cutting to the chase, kids don't care about any of this behind-the-scenes stuff. What they care about is whether something is interesting and entertaining to them. It looks like, at least per folks like Kitty J over at MASH.com, that children are increasingly less engaged with robotic musical characters. So 2017, Chuck E. Cheese announces they're going to revamp their locations. They're going to remove some animatronic acts and stages. They want to make a large dance floor where children can conga with a live Chuck E. Cheese that comes from a back room. And when he comes out, he makes it rain. He's throwing tickets out everywhere. And then he's like, dance with me, children. Dance with me.
Dance to the beat as I, the rat who is now Pied Pipering the children.
Yes.
For some reason, conjured up an image of like a Hunger Games like style, like movie, like post dystopian, like world where we all dance for Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah. No, he's a god. He's worshiped as a god at the, in this version of reality that you're describing, Max. Really quickly, just one thing that always stood out to me. I don't think I ever did it. I think you only got to do it if you were the birthday person. Do you remember the cage you'd go into where like money and tickets and stuff would blow around and you just had to grab it with your little fists, get as much as you could? Oh, yeah, it's a weird one. Max was nodding emphatically. Ben, I'm not sure if you remember that or not.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a wind tunnel kind of thing where it would like blow all around.
I remember
really hard to actually grab.
Also have never been in one of those two, but I know people who have been in them and have always, I don't know, might be resentful towards them still.
I've been in one with actual cash.
That's a thing too.
Yeah, and that is earlier days. That is more difficult to catch. So if you were playing one of those as a kid and you weren't able to get as much as you hoped, don't feel bad. A lot of adults have a hard time too.
Well, and I think to your point, Ben, it originally was mainly cash, and then I think that probably got a bad rap because A, cash is filthy, and it's probably just rubbing all around on your little child body. And also, it just kind of feels a little icky, not just because of the germy bits, but just because of the, like, I don't know, capitalism kind of vibes. It's just like, come on, children, just grab for the cash. It's sort of like that scene in Batman, you know, where he's throwing the fake Joker dollars and everyone's like rioting in the streets. That's sort of the vibe that it imparts.
And this is where we get closer and closer to the modern day. Now, the live mascot thing does make sense because kids, like, that's a Disney formula. Again, kids love engaging with the live mascots, right? And now we have to ask how far this can go. Unfortunately, according to a press release just a few years back in June of 2020, Charles Entertainment Cheese Charles Entertainment Cheese Entertainment Incorporated filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and this was predicted. This seemed almost inevitable as the pandemic reared its head. They had a pretty in-depth financial reorganization, and this came about entirely due to the massive hit they took during the early days of COVID-19, when pretty much every restaurant and arcade was shut down. The same store sales fell by like more than 20% in the first quarter. Without getting into the financial weeds, what you need to know is that Chuck E. Cheese needed a $200 million loan just to get through bankruptcy, and this would allow the chain to reopen their closed stores and continue operations, like carry out and delivery and stuff as well. And it all looked lost. It all looked for naught. However, get this little bit of good news for a second. 6 months later, CEC Entertainment announces they pulled themselves out of bankruptcy. They were financially healthy. Their restructure did away with $705 million in debt. And that's like, that's where you learn America, baby. Am I right? Like, if you were a corporation, you know, bankruptcy is just sort of like a situation you get into. And then you're going to be fine if you restructure. It's very, very strange stuff. But before we get to like tangents, trivias, and our last updates, we got to say something about Bushnell. He's a pioneer, man. He still has a thing about restaurants. He has become a restaurateur. He has founded or taken over several restaurants over the past 40 years. And he even tried something similar to showbiz with something called U Wink, letter U Wink.
Okay.
It's a restaurant where tables get touch screens in 2006.
Ew. Sort of like what Chili's.
Sort of like so many places do now.
Yeah. I mean, look, I guess this is 2006. So this is, I don't know, pre-iPad.
Robot sushi restaurant.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, this would have been, again, timing, right? Because then you have this whole business model kind of upended by, you know, easily available technology that any restaurant can just install an app on and have a thing plugged up to a charger on the table where you can, like, spend 99 cents on playing a word game while you wait so you don't have to talk to your family.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. If you are pioneering a concept, right, in any shape, form, or fashion, then you are taking on a risk that other people simply do not have to take on. This is why the concept of leapfrogging technology exists. And a lot of those competitors in this character entertainment restaurant space, a lot of them were benefiting from the risk that Bushnell took. In his career, which spans, as Fast Company put it, spans well into a half century, Bushnell never stopped chasing this idea of entertainment and socializing and food and drink. Pong was the first game that had required two players, and Pong ended up in a lot of restaurants. The end of that article, honestly, it kind of falls into like this shout out or this tribute to Bushnell's work. And I'd like to just hit this one thing that really stood out from the Fast Company article. They say, maybe that's the secret behind Chuck E. Cheese's enduring relevance. It's not about technology or singing animals. The place is a cultural Trojan horse that brought families together, helped arcade games become acceptable, and made eating into family entertainment. I think that's very nice. It's a very nice thing to say. I don't know if it's the first to the post in eating as family entertainment, We'd have to figure out when, what's it called? Medieval times?
That was probably that later. That seems 80s. Doesn't that seem 80s
it
to you?
It feels maybe 90s.
It feels 15th century to me.
Oh, they got you. No, this is true. I mean, look, it's sort of the family restaurant, you know? I mean, the idea of even something as simple as like a free coloring book for kids, you know what I mean? Like just this idea of a place where you could all come as a family. Uh-huh. There's something on the menu for everybody. Even the idea of a kid's menu, you know, like that was kind of innovative at the time. And so I think all of this kind of springs from that. And honestly, you know, Bushnell was... you know, we talked about how he was sort of like fascinated by these family restaurants and wanted to kind of take them into the next generation or whatever, into the future. So, I mean, these concepts were just sort of escalations of things that definitely already existed. But
medieval times, 1960s.
No joke.
No wow. joke. So there we go. Okay. All right. Just had to put that out there. Get in front
History of the family restaurant. I just want to know, like, when, like, history of family restaurants. It looks to be the rise of family restaurants started after World War II and has grown into an important part. That makes sense. It was this idea of kind of, like, this was something that was attainable for everybody. You know, like, in the 1700s, there's this article on GunterTudies.com, which I think is a family diner of some sort. But they point out, GunterTudies, in the 1700s, it wasn't uncommon for wealthy families to send a servant to pick up dinner, you know, which was then eaten at home. The idea of dining out in general as a family was not really attainable. It wasn't until, you know, the early 1900s that children were even allowed into restaurants.
You know, I'm not going to say let's all be time travelers, but I think there are certain restaurants that probably shouldn't have, they should have age restrictions. You know what I mean? Fair. Not just bars, but like no. You know, you're out on a really nice candlelit romantic dinner with your, you know, one and only of the month. And then you probably don't want a screaming child, or maybe that's your ambiance. I don't know. Who am I?
Only if it's on theme. You know, if that's like the theme that you have chosen for your night
baby,
out, the screaming
things
have
been
child
going
restaurant.
Really yeah. Well. Congratulations on your promotion. Let's go have a romantic celebration at Screaming Child Bistro.
Screaming Child. I did have a couple of things that I discovered when I was looking into how COVID affected the Chuck E. Cheese, you know, empire. We talked a little bit about that. You know, they did file for bankruptcy after, you know, amassing more than $1 billion in debt. They were able to raise some funds. And now I believe they're in the process of restructuring. But there were a couple of interesting stories that really kind of hit home. For example, apparently they've been doing that ghost kitchen thing that a lot of restaurants do, where, like, you know, it sort of came up during COVID, where you were using a kitchen in a brick and mortar restaurant in order to serve food for another restaurant brand. So you would essentially like lease out part of your kitchen, but that's not exactly what Charles did. They actually created a kind of phony Italian restaurant called Pasquale's Pizza and Wings, and just served their Chuck E. Cheese fare, you know, to unsuspecting online diners. Because, I mean, let's be honest, y'all. I mean, Chuck E. Cheese pizza ain't all that. It's not that good.
Well, I bet you that somewhere there is a person putting their heart and soul into what they're cooking. And you can tell, but as a rule, generally, yeah, Chuck E. Cheese is not going to be the same pizza as your local mom and pop store. Yeah, I know. Most of us have had bad experiences. I'm just defending the one person out there whom I hope, who I hope is breaking the stereotype or exceeding expectations.
And as of, you know, the restructuring, this may not be the most up-to-date information right now, but more than 34 locations that were open when coronavirus hit have closed. And that's in, you know, states across the country. And to piggyback on that, research associate extraordinaire Zach, Dr. Z. Williams, found a pretty interesting and slightly disturbing detail about what happens when a Chuck E. Cheese location is closed. The Chuck E. Cheese costumes, and I believe the animatronics, or at the very least the like heads that go on them, are decommissioned in a pretty alarming and brutal way that really fits in with Max's dystopian kind of like god-like scenario where Chuck E. Cheese is worshipped. Only in this situation, he's actually sacrificed. There's video that surfaced of employees at a location that was being closed, smashing the cartoon character head with a sledgehammer.
Like ripping the covers off magazines.
Yeah. Throw them away. Yeah. Hmm. And apparently this is a corporate policy. Because it makes sense, right? Because you wouldn't want that head to fall into the wrong hands and then have the brand like besmirched. Who knows? People could wear them and like do crimes, mm-hmm. you know? So you just don't, they had to just get rid of it. They had to smash it up.
Yeah. And there's that great Atlas Obscura article, right? By Paula Mejia, mm-hmm. Which talks about this in detail, why Chuck E. Cheese has a corporate policy about destroying its mascot's head. You might say, I don't want to go to the new Chuck E. Cheese. I want the animatronics. I know the company might be weirdly defensive. They still have, where they do have robots, they're still powered by a floppy disk. That's a true story. Check out The Bite for more on that. Shout out to Noor Al-Sibai. But if you yearn for that nostalgia, folks, and nostalgia is a heck of a drug, then never fear, you can go see a collection of memorabilia from the old days of Showbiz Pizza in Sandy Hook, Mississippi, thanks to Damon Brenlin, the owner of Smitty's Super Service. Now, Noel, I haven't been to this place. I've actually barely been to many locations in Mississippi, just regular places, not even Chuck E. Cheese.
I don't think I've ever been to Mississippi, ever.
Well, maybe the first time we go to this Smitty Super Service.
This sounds fantastic. He's got fully functioning animatronics. It's set up to look just like the restaurant. And that's funny because I wonder how he got around this. Because, I mean, with the Rockefeller explosion stuff, they bought it directly from the dude who created them who would not sell the IP. But this goes against the whole idea of them destroying the stuff. Because a big part of the Atlas Obscura article, or the point that the writer makes, is that they're basically exerting control over their trademark because they wouldn't want these things to be like available on eBay and for someone to literally do what this person, Damon Breland, is doing at Smitty's Super Service. So I'm confused as to how he's operating under the radar like this without the power of Charles Entertainment Cheese corporate coming down on him like a sledgehammer of the gods.
Yeah. It's an interesting question, and if it's not love for the world, then we'll have to get back on the road and check it out. We hope that you enjoyed this week's two-part episode, folks. Obviously, the nostalgia is strong with us. We hope it's strong with you. This story goes in so many directions. We want to thank, as always, super producer Mr. Max Williams for herding the production cats here. Who else should we thank? Oh, Giles Entertainment Cheese.
Ugh, I don't know, man. He gives me the creeps. I kind of liked his youthful rock star rebranding, to be honest. Thanks to Max Williams. Of course, Zach, Dr. Z, what a guy.
And big, big thanks to Eves Jeffcoat, Christopher Hasiotis, Casey Pegram. Casey. And reluctantly, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister.
Mm-hmm. You can actually see a video of us in our other podcast iteration, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, hanging out with Jonathan Strickland in real life at a miniature golf course, a historical miniature golf course in Austin, Texas, called Peter Pan Golf, talking conspiracies and just joshing around on the links, the miniature links.
On the links, yeah.
I don't think it's out yet, but it will be soon. You can take a look for that at our other show's social media, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram. Keep a lookout for that video. It's a fun one.
Yeah, especially if you like nostalgia. I don't know, man. This has actually, weirdly enough, it's made me kind of hungry.
Oh, yeah. Is it about lunchtime? It's close. I think we can swing
close
it.
Enough.
Yeah, let's order some middling pizza. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.